面。
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, I'm calling to you from the cold state of Illinois. We're still at about 32 degrees out here. At least the sun is shining, but the cold's not letting up, and we do have more snow predicted for this week. Totally astonishing for the beginning of spring of, 2014. Where'd the years go? Well, in March of 1991, as we've all discussed before, General Schwarzkopf assigned me by name to clean up the depleted uranium mess following use of DU munitions in Desert Storm. From that, we ended up putting together a whole bunch of reports and everything, and as a consequence, in 1994, I was reordered back to active duty as Depleted Uranium Project Director, where at such time, I wrote the Army regulations dealing with the management of depleted uranium and all of the other associated radioactive materials, how to clean it up. This included structures, buildings, equipment, tanks, armor, cars, trucks, everything under the sun. Well, as we know and as we've discussed, the health effects of this stuff is devastating. We also know the health effects are not limited to the combat areas of Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, the Balkans, Somalia, Afghanistan at all. One of the worst areas that have come about in the last years is the island of Hawaii, all the islands on Hawaii, mainly Oahu and also the main island of Hawaii. Well, tonight let's talk about it. Jim, Lauren, are you there?
Yes, we're here, Doug.
Yes, we're here.
Lauren, that's Jim.
Aloha, Doug.
Thank you. Well, greetings. Welcome to Warrior Connection again.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And well, I'm on, Doug.
Oh, hey, Denise, are you there too?
Yes, and I just want to make one public announcement so everybody knows. We do have our bill introduced on the Gulf War Research Reform Act of 2014, introduced by Kaufman, and there will be a hearing on that you connect by Internet for the web through the VA House Veterans Committee, and it will be televised on the net, so encourage everybody to watch that Mr. Benz will be testifying on our bill, and so we need everybody paying attention to that this week. And a reminder that our RAC meeting in D.C. will be on April 28th and 29th, where they will be presenting their report, a big one like 2008 was. So we're encouraging vets to get up there for the RAG meeting and then to go to the Hill and brief legislators and get our bill passed. Plus, there's some effort to add some presumptives to the Gulf War illness. That's kind of what I have for today for a general announcement.
Well, Denise, we still want you to stay around. Jim, Lauren, this is Major Denise Nichols. Denise was running medevac in the front line in Iraq in Saudi Arabia at Log Base Charlie. And she became cross-contaminated from depleted uranium as a result of treating the casualties and got all over the place. And then Denise and I, when did we write that report for the House Oversight Committee? That's years ago, isn't it?
That was years ago when Congressman Burton was overall chairman of the committee, and then Shays had the subcommittee after that.
Yeah, so a long time. Yeah. Well, Jim and Lorraine, why don't you tell everybody, and you got the two experts right here. We're really military experts, even though they don't like us anymore. Tell us what has been happening in Hawaii and where we're at and what we need to do, please.
Well, this is Lauren. I just want to make sure I speak as a private citizen. My day job, I'm with the Department of Health in Hawaii. I am retired Army Medical Corps 24 years. Now, in Hawaii, I came back to Hawaii in the year 2000, and I found out that at our practice weapon range, they had used depleted uranium. We don't exactly know how much or what form. Long ago, there was an old form called spotting rounds, Davy Crockett, where they weren't using it as an explosive. They were using it to calculate the trajectory of launching a small uranium weapon, because depleted uranium is about the same density as uranium. So they did that long ago, and then they left these depleted uranium rounds all over the place. Since then, we don't know if they were using the other type of weaponry, the incendiary depleted uranium. I suspect they did. I saw it demonstrated. I was in Cairo in 1982, after the assassination of Anwar Sadat, and the Warthogs, the A-10s, were firing DU, and everybody was impressed. We don't know if they were testing it on our ranges, and all we asked was a survey to see how much is really out there. At first, they told us there was no DU used, nothing, no spotting rounds, no incendiary rounds, blah, blah, blah. And then we found out they had records that they did use it. Then there was a question of how much did they use? And it could be anywhere from X to 20X or 200X. All we asked was a survey. Then they said that we shouldn't worry about it because uranium's heavier than air, and so we couldn't possibly breathe the dust. And we kind of dispelled that myth because we're worried about DU oxidized dust. So they don't say that anymore when I'm in the room and when Jim is in the room, but when we're not in the room, they always bring that up. Don't worry about it. Uranium's heavier than air. You're not going to breathe nothing.
See, that's one of the lies that came about, because the uranium has a very heavy density and mass, but the particulates are so small that what we found out from Desert Storm is the resuspension and redistribution of any of the uranium dust is actually staggering.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's how you got the contamination into the medical center at the medevac station, right?
Well,
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. It would be by the sand, or if anybody picked up the used shells from the Warhawks, and also any clothing. But most of the clothing that the troops had on them were removed, and we got them from the Army hospitals, three of them. So we would have just had their gear in a bag and them. I know Dr. Diaz years ago, and I think he's died since, but his concern and what he wrote about was secondary exposure to uniforms and all that.
Oh, absolutely. But we know that the dust, the most dangerous forms, are the smaller ones, smaller than 5 microns, and we know those travel. When that Camp Falcon exploded, and they detected dust particles in the U.K.,
absolutely, totally verified. And I was literally on the island of Vieques, Puerto Rico, when they were blowing stuff up. And we went airborne, and we saw the DU dust going from Vieques all the way over to the main island, Hawaii, in the dust clouds. I mean, I'm airborne watching it. It was staggering.
And I think some industrialized countries, say China, when they industrialize, they make a lot of dust, aluminum, and some uranium, I think, maybe not DU, but uranium. And you can track it coming from China across the Pacific to the U.S., across the U.S., across the Atlantic, all the way back to China. So not only does it generate a lot of dust, but it stays suspended a long time. When Pinatubo, you know, the volcano erupted, I mean, we had wonderful dust, wonderful color sunset for years. And, of course, it cooled the earth. So the stuff makes a lot of dust that stays suspended for a long time. Which is kind of another important point, Denise and Doug. Initially, when they looked at soldiers in theater and they followed the soldiers for health effects, they would take people like you, Doug, who went out to clean up the equipment, or you, Denise, who helped people get the dust off their clothes, and they would follow you and they would say, these people don't have any more serious side effects than what? Than the controls.
But see,
where
are
the controls? They chose other people in theater who had just as much dust. So in science, this is what we call the contaminated controls. They should have compared against age-matched, gender-matched soldiers who never deployed, or never deployed yet. So that was number one criticism of their studies.
Well, you know, let's bring this out real clear. You know, we never got the medical testing. Again, the same thing just happened here in the last 3 weeks, and thanks to Denise and her stuff on Facebook, another one of my team members, original team members from Desert Storm, just like the rest of us, never got any medical care, and he showed up real sick with all his medical problems, and we've been working trying to get him medical care now for 3 weeks. So when they say that they followed us and gave medical care to everybody, that's a complete total lie, and that's one of the reasons that Colonel John Gingrich, who wrote the report, was fired last year, amongst a whole other thing. So, and again, when I had the conversation the other day with Dr. Matthew Reinhardt, director of War Injuries Clinic, it was clear to him because Denise and I have been both up there. He's had Chris, another member of our guys up there with us onto their clinic and found all of us sick, and now this other guy showed up, and they had seen him once before. But so all this stuff, when they say that they followed everybody and nobody was sick, is just absolute, complete, utter nonsense.
Now, you know, I mean, you remember how controversial the Gulf War syndrome was. At first, they denied it. But there was a report funded by the VA when Shinseki took over, and they had another group come and look independently. I think it was Boston University, maybe Kansas. There was a bunch of universities that looked. And they said that when you combine all the syndromes, there is an excess of pathology and illness out of the Gulf War veterans to the tune of 350,000 excess. And so, you know, one type of illness might not be significant, but altogether. And based on that, Doug, they were supposed to take care of all of you guys. But they're very afraid to say, I think it's DU. First of all, they take care of you because it's Gulf War related. You went to the Gulf, we take care of you. But the minute you say, I think it's DU, you're dealing with, then you follow the dotted lines, and it points to weapons of mass destruction. Because the civilians in the Mideast and in the Balkans now are, these are non-combatants that have a legacy of birth defects, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, we've seen the medical problems. We've been to multiple conferences. One of the reasons Denise and I did that report to the House Oversight years ago with Chris Hayes, Bernie Sanders, and everything, because of the contamination and the health effects. Well, now Hawaii, we got known use, absolutely confirmed from the U.S. Senate. We've got those letters from your previous senator. Confirmed use on Oahu there at Schofield Barracks. We have total confirmation of use up there at Pukala Training Area on the main island of Hawaii. Okay? And we have all probability, and this goes back to the congressman out of Washington State, where he had total confirmation that the Navy was using it and the Coast Guard was using it in their 50 cal and 20 millimeter rounds every place under the sun. That includes right there in Pearl Harbor, so, and off the coast.
Yeah.
So, again, it's staggering.
If I could say something, Doug, this is Jim Albertini. You know, one document came out of the military in the effort here that not only have these Davy Crockett spotting rounds been used here in Hawaii, but they list an additional, I believe it's 13 or 14 other states and three foreign countries. Now, that's just for the Davy Crockett DU spotting rounds. You know, there's probably two dozen other DU penetrating rounds in the arsenal, plus how many other spotting rounds over the last 40 years might have contained DU. So this is a national, international issue of DU contamination. So it's much broader than just the state of Hawaii or combat zones. It involves pretty much everyone.
Doug, let's get this real clear for your audience, okay? There's the penetrating rounds that need no explosive, and on impact, the DU burns and explodes. I think there's no question that when you hit your target, 50% will go up as dust and get up as dust. The old spotting rounds were never meant to impact and explode. Fine. So what are we worried about those? Because if there was a site that just used old spotting rounds, when they use conventional weapons, I mean, it's the same thing. An impact is an impact. And you'll burn and explode the unexploded spotting rounds. So either way, you follow spotting rounds by conventional weapons, or you add in DU penetrating explosives, all we ask is for a survey. And I think that's not too much to ask.
Well, that's, you know, again, what you're describing is exactly what happened. Because when we did all this testing with conventional explosive DU rounds, the whole Tibet and specialized explosives, thermite and thermate at the Nevada test site during the Nevada test in 94 and 95, we found exactly what you said, the conventional explosives spread this stuff all over creation. And we saw that and measured that one-on-one, you know, when we were in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and then other team members have measured it in the Balkans and in Somalia. So you've got a mess. Now, the other thing, too, that came up, and I know we tried to stop this in February, the military was going back and doing conventional explosives and all this stuff in these contaminated areas to resuspend stuff, correct?
Correct. And you remember, 50%, let's take a penetrating round. You hit the target, okay? 50% goes up as dust, 50% is on the ground. You go and follow it up with conventional whatevers, you resuspend that part that was on the ground. I mean, there's no way around this.
It's just a mess all over. Now, you know, again, one of the most recent letters out, Jim, that you've written, again, you're looking at the mayor there, because we got this Mauna Kea State Park, which is so close to Pukalawa train area that the suspension, everything probable contamination there is real, much less the scout camps.
That park is where we initially, our citizen monitors detected some form of radiation coming off the Waukulua base on May 29th, 2007. This was 3 months before they officially acknowledged they had used the penetrator rounds about one half mile to a mile from that park. And the day we picked up the radiation, the winds were coming directly from where those ranges are located on the Puakaloa base toward the park. And we picked up radiation at that park on several occasions. So maybe stonewalling from the military preventing any surveys, maybe one strategy should be to push the county or the state to do surveys at that park for the DU contamination.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. And again, using the proper equipment, because when Denise and I were doing this for real in the combat zones, what we found is the radiax and everything trying to do the measurements is so difficult to do that we had to develop special techniques. Now, with the confirmation, I mean, what you have just said is staggering. You got conventional civilian weapons measuring contamination coming off of the train area after the use of it on there, which totally confirms resuspension. I know some of the military guys and the guys that are on the mailing list for the nuclear regulatory stuff that we do are some of the bad guys that we've challenged and have been trying to continue the lies forever and ever, ever on DU for the Army, for the Air Force. They're on there. So, I mean, it's just, there's no question whatsoever. The other thing, too, and again, when you read the Army regulations, and now you guys have been using this tremendously, but if we can get in a response, the Army regulation that I wrote, that General Shinseki signed, that Denise then helped when we did all the briefings for Congress after that, makes it very clear the military must comply with all environmental laws to include local and host nation and state laws and nuclear regulatory and environmental protection laws. So it's not where their military is absolved from responsibility for complying. So where here you've set up, you know, asking your local community and local officials to hold the military accountable, boy, that's perfect. But the question is, how do we get the military held accountable, the military leaders held accountable for contaminating air, water, and soil and making people sick and denying medical care and denying environmental cleanup?
Well, don't forget, Doug. You remember I was military, and whenever we do something, it's exactly like you say. Military, I can almost quote them, will follow federal, state, county, local, or international laws if you're overseas, whichever is more precautionary. The end. But how is our State Department of Health weighing in on this? They just published an article. You saw that, Doug. They took the position that DU, all we worry about is the chemical effects on the kidney. Gee, but that's one, you remember that, you're the co-author of the response.
Yeah.
But their own reference itself has part two, the inhaled, I mean, it's funny how everybody can use the same reference, that ATSDR reference, and they focus on the toxic kidney effect of straight metal, and we always focus on the lung effect of the dust oxides. Now, that has got to stop. And, you know, they published this without conferring us, but they know we were upset about this, and we're going to mount some kind of rebuttal. Then I was kind of shocked that you sent me the FOIA, Freedom of Information Act report, and that was very good. The military in that discusses how much DU dust was created, and attached to that, you had attached University at Albany. There's a doctor's name. He is spot on. He agrees totally with us. I've never consulted him before about the risk of the dust and oxides and persistence in the body, and it's more than just kidney chemical effect. So I looked up University at Albany. I wonder who these guys are. That's the SUNY system, State University of New York. I don't know why they call themselves University at Albany. Some guys call it Out Albany. That's the oldest of the SUNY universities. So I think we should contact them. I forgot the guy's name, Simmons or something like that.
Yeah, so what had happened up there is we had a DU plant, National Lead Site, in Albany that got gross contamination all over. I actually went up there and measured it and saw, and then we had a medical conference at the university, so it has got started. One thing I want to come back to, when I read the direct quote from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Physician's Guidance Handbook,
okay?
This is a direct quote. United States Department of Veteran Affairs, quote, some things you need to know about veterans. Clinician's Guide to Veteran-Specific Issues states, quote, some of the physical symptoms which occur as a result of exposure to depleted uranium are sleep problems, mood swings, symptoms in upper or lower respiratory system, neuropsychological symptoms including memory loss, chronic fatigue, immune system dysfunction, skin rashes, hair loss, aching joints, headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, menstrual disorders, gastrointestinal symptoms, recurrent diarrhea, nervous disorders such as numbness in a limb, multiple chemical sensitivity, birth defects in children. And then when we go to the actual Army internal Wakayama briefing, which you guys have had and been using, it confirms all the cancer. It confirms all of the water and milk contamination. It confirms all the eye problems, which have been confirmed in all of us. Confirms, I mean, everything under the sun. So their internal reports, despite what they want to say in the public, as you know, and we can use, totally confirm the health effects. And again, this comes on back down to the order I was given in the Los Alamos Memorandum in March of 1991, ordering us to lie in all the reports of all liability. At the same time, the Defense Nuclear Agency confirmed serious health effects. So it's a staggering problem. Now, in Hawaii, where they've been used, it, obviously, we got two on the island of Oahu, and these islands are not real big to begin with. Oahu is a main tourist area. You have some, you know, obviously food production, everything for the island and all this stuff. What is the probability, or what is the distances between where we know absolute, total, known, verified contamination first on Oahu from Schofield Barracks to where inhabitants and water and all the other stuff in their tourist areas are gone? Cover that. And then what do we have on the main island of Hawaii as far as Pukalo and the Girl and Boy Scout camps?
Well, you know, first of all, let me backtrack just a little bit. You have these military documents talking about the health risk. When we tried to bring it up with the military here, General Lee, he left. You think these guys actually saw those documents, or these documents didn't go to them so they could, in sincerity, say, I don't know of any health risk? I mean, did the military shield themselves from these documents?
Well, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, I guess it's time to take the documents public and ask the military. Said, these are your own documents. Maybe you didn't see them, but be forewarned that here they are. You see them, number one. Number two, if you say health risk, which is true, the cleanup, the liability is going to be immense. It's the three areas, right? Taking care of the Gulf War veterans. I calculated the bill at $40 billion over their lifetime of over their lifetimes. Then you have the international complaints, because it is a weapon of mass destruction in the Balkans and the Mideast. And then you have cleaning up those areas as well as our target areas. I mean, the implications are huge, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't disclose the truth. The least we can do is stop using it, and then the second part is maybe clean up and make compensation somehow.
Stop spreading it
around. Stop spreading around.
Yeah, what are the implications for tourism in Hawaii with the real knowledge of all the contamination? I mean, we know we have all kinds of contamination in Pearl Harbor and off the coast there, mm-hmm. where the primary beaches are. That's a given.
Yes. You saw the cancer reports. They focused near Pearl Harbor. We always thought it was chemicals by the harbor or something. But You know, if you kind of look at upwind and downwind, those areas are not too far from the practice ranges. But I mean, and I don't doubt for one second that the cleanup is immense, maybe impossible to do. But let's not lie about these things just because the cleanup is. But we got to stop using it and stop spreading it around.
Yeah, that's the key thing, Doug. This is Jim. We know we have contaminated areas, and now for the military to continue bombing these areas, that's just a willful criminal activity. And the county council of the Big Island here, Hawaii Island, in 2008 passed a resolution by a vote of 8-1 calling for the military to stop all live fire at Pu'akaloa and to clean up the DU, and the military has ignored that county council request and continues to bomb the island here.
But you know, with the recent letter you sent us about the FOIA and the university at Albany, I mean, it's one thing to say, let's do a survey and figure out what to do and keep bombing until we figure that out. It's another thing to have a moratorium on these things till we figure out how much we got. Now, a lot of people, a moratorium will get them going. Otherwise, you know, we get to do what we normally do. Yeah, and we'll do a study. Yeah, sure. It's the other way around. You suspend these things until you do the study. That'll make them do a good study.
You know, we got to come back to it, too, because, again, go back to Los Alamos Memorandum, and everybody's had references. You can read this online. It's presented to the House of Senate and everybody. Denise and I actually wrote the main reports with all the documents years ago. In that Los Alamos Memorandum, it orders everybody in the military associated with DU to lie in the reports in order to sustain the use of uranium missions and avoid all liability. So you're never going to find, and this is what I've learned that's bothered me since they assigned me to do this, is the fact that no matter what we find, no matter what we report, when it comes to the official policy, it's going to come down and they're going to lie. And what's staggering is just it never ends at any stretch of the imagination. Now, let's come back to a little bit of history of Hawaii, okay? Because, again, this bothers me to no end. Hawaii was a sovereign nation invaded by the U.S. Marines in 1993, overthrown the Royal Hawaiian government, and then the islands were seized.
1893, sorry.
Correct, 1893. And then eventually what happened is the U.S. and all the stuff basically took it as a state. It all came down for the whole thing for the sugar plantation, transportation, shipping, and all the other stuff. So Hawaii is just another nation that's been bombed in oblivion with contamination for years and years and years that the U.S. is taking under its wing and saying, well, it's ours, and now we're not going to clean it all up. So, I mean, that in itself, to me, as a military officer and a guy that's been to Hawaii and tried to set up the cleanup for you guys and try to help, you know, and was involved in doing this, and Denise and I wrote the reports trying to get this all done, it's mind-boggling. But how do the real Hawaiians feel about all this? I mean, when you look at the history of what the U.S. has done to Hawaii, and now they're continuing to contaminate in the islands that should be pristine and no problems at all, how does the average real Hawaiian feel about this?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. I mean, because of the 100 years of occupation here and the creation of economic dependency on the military, there's a lot of people that are just complicit in the military presence because they see no option. Now, there's also a significant number of Hawaiians that are, of course, speaking up against this and joining in the calls that Lauren and I are talking about. And the military, I'll give you one example. There's a Hawaiian who was on this Cultural Advisory Council for Pu'akaloa, and because he participated in this recent film about Pu'akaloa, he was fired by the military. So it's a classic violation of the whistleblowing laws, their treatment of Hawaiian people that dare to speak up against them instead of rubber stamping the policies here.
Also, you know, Doug, let's just, not just Hawaiians, but people who were, like, I'm fifth generation, just people from Hawaii. A lot of their mentality is, you know, yeah, we're wrong to be doing this, but if I didn't do it, somebody else would, so it may as well be me and take the job. We see this repeatedly with the biotech companies, with their pesticides, you know. Yeah, it's kind of wrong, but you know they're going to do it, and it may as well be me, and I need a job. Well, I mean, that only goes so far here. If we all had that attitude, then, you know. But there are, as Jim said, more and more upset Hawaiians. The homestead land that was set aside for them, they're a little bit downwind, the Puakaloa. And
some of them are former bombing ranges, Hawaiian homestead land.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Native American Indians, right? You give them the junk land, and then you use it for target practice.
But now, the other thing, too, and I think this is extremely important, both Lauren and I, you ran into us in our duties in the military. Conventional explosives and all this stuff, when it blows everything up, the byproduct of conventional explosives are also a toxic mess all over. And when you get combining, again, under the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency laws, when they combine what you and I define as mixed waste, the radiological and a conventional explosive, you've got a toxic mess in a compound that can be resuspended, redistributed, get into the entire food chain, get into the air, get into the water, and affect everything all over. And when you come down to it, it's required to clean it up, but it seems like they just ignore it.
Yeah. Now, on the science side, Doug and Denise, if you're still there, you remember when the Gulf War issue first came, they looked at all the different syndromes, but all the different exposures. There was anti-malarial prophylaxis, there was repellent, there was burning of the oil fields, there was DU, but you bring it up with anybody and they'll tell you two chemicals, or agents in this case, radiation, are considered a new chemical with new toxicities, quantitative and qualitative, to have proven otherwise. Now, you burn the oil fields, you got what? 200 chemicals, right? The insect repellent is 4. The anti-malarial prophylaxis is 1. You get the idea.
Yep.
But you get these new mixtures. But, Doug, you didn't even have to resort to new mixtures. Just the DU alone. You rattled off a whole bunch of symptoms. They can all be explained because depleted uranium oxide dust is not cleared from the body so quickly like metal, and it flows in the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system goes everywhere. And when you send DU oxides everywhere, you got two things. The radiation burn, because it's up close and personal to the tissue, or the mutagenesis from the irradiation of the genes. I mean, I'm not surprised. You got syndromes all over the place. Because the lymph syndrome, the lymph flows all over the place, the lymphatics.
Yeah, that was, and Denise, you were talking about this earlier. This is, again, with the Benz Commission, the RAC report, trying to maintain this. Made the report, came from Boston, and again, it was Jim Benz and all of them, and Denise is still working with those guys. Denise, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, fill us in. I mean, the RAC report in 2008 that Lauren and Jim have put to was the one that Jim came out, and they confirmed all the health effects. They didn't touch DU or anthrax, obviously, but since then we've blown that apart.
Well, they haven't ruled out DU or anthrax. It's just that the basics of the Research Advisory Committee people is to find diagnostic methods to diagnose this stuff, okay, and that's why we had Dr. Haley, Dr. Baranek study in Georgetown using fMRI, DTs, and different mechanisms diagnostically of the brain. Anyway, the goal is diagnostic testing to prove a point, you know, get you some idea of where the damage is. Biomarkers. Now, Dr. Klimas in Florida has combined with Dr. Broderick, who was in Canada, on mapping and determining the biomarkers, the cytokines, and all those other ingredients to damage. And then the last thing is to find treatments. And we're really gearing to more treatment trials to help the quality of life, number one, to subdue some of these symptoms. It may not be a cure, but at least a treatment. The best research has been done under the DOD, Congressionally Directed Medical Research, the VA research. I mean, they've done acupuncture, massage. I mean, but not looking at the hard science to find the damage within the body so that you can find a cure or a treatment, at least. Treatment is number one, cure is number two. And so the DOD CDMRP funding was gone after by Senator Sanders and Congressman Kirkpatrick. Congressman Kucinich. And so every year we have to fight for funding. We got $20 million last year, okay? So we hope to keep that funding at that level. Within that funding, the other thing that is happening besides animal study, independent researchers' ideas, which are usually based on a one-year program, is developing consortiums of universities coming together, like Wayne State, Wright State. In Florida, Dr. Klimas is working with Nova University, with the Canadian she recruited to be involved in the biomarkers. So we have consortiums that are developing in Waco, Texas area. Dr. Leah Still has moved from Kansas to Waco. That one's been funded. They'll be starting to have patient involvement soon. Dr. Klimas has funding. I think Boston University with Dr. Roberta White and Dr. Sullivan will be having some. But these are independently funded through congressionally directed. They put in their proposals when they have a proposal, you know, deadline to submit by. That goes through an interdata panel. Basically, we don't want any stress studies. We're fed up with that. We want the hardcore science. And then it goes to peer review panels, and after it comes out of the peer review panel with a rating, the interdative panel again looks at it to see which ones get funded first. With the basic of, you know, we got $20 million this year. When we started this, that first year, we only had $5 million. We had 33 research projects, and if we had funded all of it, it would have been over $20 million. And being the first time, a lot of the studies weren't well developed and didn't get a high score. We've battled between 5 and 10 million and finally got it marked up to 20 last year. And we hope to keep that going, but we have to fight for it each year. And what happens is our sponsors put the letter forward to the Appropriations Committee. When they have their letter ready, we start contacting every one of the House of Reps, which is where it starts, and we try to get others to sign on to that letter asking DOD approves for CDMRP to have some weight on this. Then we do the same thing over in the Senate side. So, you know, that's where we're focusing the research now is biomarkers, treatment. Diagnostic, I think we've done everything we can on brain neural imaging. Although I know that Dr. Steele and Waco Baylor will be doing a study using each of those methods with, I think, 150 vets to see, you know, what it shows in comparison to each method, be it fMRI, DT, scans like Dr. Haley recommended to find out which is the best type thing, which one shows the damage. So we have a lot of work being done through that method. You know, I think it was decided that we may never get the answer, whether it's DU, anthrax, the PB pills, be it the chemical exposures that did occur in theater to sarin, be it the fan, be it the oil well fires. I mean, we may never find the one. That it was never one. It's a combination. And so our focus has been to show where the damage is diagnostically, where are the biomarkers pointing us to. Biomarkers will lead you to treatment.
Now, the next question, again, for Lauren and Jim. I mean, we've got military personnel affected, all of us. We're affected ourselves. Denise and I are both trashed, okay? Our teams are trashed. Now we come down to the civilians. So we have all the civilians that were never in the military living around these areas, like we have all the non-combatants in these areas that are all sick with all the medical problems. Has the military been responsive at all to as far as medical care for the affected civilians in the on Hawaii?
As far as I know, it's zero. Plus, you look at the official position of the Department of Health, not a big deal. It's only toxic kidney, which is ditzel. So the first response in Hawaii is, what problem?
Right. We even said, you know, that to the military a year ago, in fact, this week, a year ago, Isaac Harp and I met with the commander at Pu'akuloa. And we said that, you know, there are three MDs and a naturopathic doctor in Hilo that I'm aware of that have patients with uranium showing up in their urine. And we said to the commander, as an act of good faith, would you offer 24-hour urine tests to some of your long-term workers to see if there is exposure to uranium DU on Pu'akuloa? He refused. That certainly isn't a very good faith response to the community. So we've had, as you, Lauren, said, first of all, a denial of there's any problem. We've had stonewalling of any cooperation with the community in being able to do surveys or monitoring of air or soil, and even now this the 24-hour urine test, which would you like to pursue?
Well, with this most recent explosions and firing on the range, if I'm not wrong, we had evidence of people getting sick and getting exposures after that recent in February, correct?
I'm not aware of that.
I don't know about that. All we saw, Doug, was that our monitors were picking up stuff.
Okay, so the monitors are definitely picking stuff coming off of the range after the detonations.
Correct.
Yeah. And I'll give you one example. I had been contacted by a woman who traveled the Saddle Road. That's between the Hilo and Kona sides, the east and west sides of Hawaii Island, the public highway, during heavy bombing periods. She stopped to use the restroom at that public park and a few days later had a urine test done for another different matter to check for heavy metals. All of her tests were normal in heavy metals except the uranium, which was very high.
Bingo.
So, and there is an indication of pointing to possible contamination through the bombing at Pu'akuloa.
Well, that's a given because, you know, we got to come back to it. Again, you know, the military told us and everything when Denise and I were working this, that was, you know, natural uranium. We have to understand, natural uranium in the environment is like one piece of pepper in a whole giant gallon bucket of salt. And so it's not the same versus with the DU dust. This stuff is staggering because when we saw it on in Iraq and Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and then when we did the Nevada testing, the amount was just staggering. I mean, the clouds were staggering, the area contaminated around the area. And again, this is why the Army regulations and the common task training require total isolation and securing and cleanup and everything else that they just seem to totally disregard. When you've asked the military in Hawaii about compliance with Army Regulation 700-48 and all the associated stuff, what was their response?
No comment. And, you know, people need to realize that this base, this 133,000-acre military training area on Hawaii Island, is located right in the middle of the island, between the two major mountains of Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa, where there's high winds that normally go through that area. And there's increasing traffic on this highway now, so that any contamination can be blown around the island or taken around the island on vehicles and other things.
Now, we know that because we have an active volcano that puts out SO2, which is lighter, a gas, and SO4, the particulates, you know, make things look hazy. Depends which way wind blowing. It depends what's part of the islands or islands, because it can blow all the way up the chain with this hazy stuff. And you know the DU dust, the small stuff, yeah, I mean, come on, it can blow off to get up to the UK from an explosion in Iraq.
Yeah, that was totally confirmed by Chris Busby and all the research they did, and also totally confirmed by the Royal Academy of Sciences. So it's not a question of whether it happened. It's a fact that it did happen. You know, so again, the implications, I mean, Oahu, myself, I've been there many times. I got family there, and you know, with all this stuff. That is a main tourist area. We get down to the main island of Hawaii. That is also a main tourist area, correct?
Yeah, with the Kona side, right?
Yeah, the west side of the island, which is downwind, is the luxury resorts where people are paying thousands of dollars a night at hotels there.
But Doug, I mean, you and I, Denise, are all military. Put yourself in their shoes now. First of all, someone is going to accuse the military of using this dangerous stuff and all over. First response is, well, it's not spreading. Well, we'd like to do a survey, and we'd like to do off-site and on-site. Well, no. Next response, even if it was spreading, it's not dangerous. I mean, you got different fronts, right? I mean, you got to sit them down all at once and say, number one, it is dangerous, or it's certainly so unknown that we're so worried about this. Number two, I think it is spreading, and we're about to look. Number three, Denise, what you say, you know that agency, CDMRP, Congress Direct Medical Research Program, I sit on the panel, not for DU, but for other diseases. I kind of know how they operate. You ask them, with all their funding, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million, you ask them, so how are you guys doing, guys? Are we diagnosing it? Are we treating it? A lot of times you could diagnose it. That's great. You diagnose it. But when the treatment is impossible and the diagnosis shows it's widespread, I think you're supposed to play the prevention card. Now,
well, that's what we put together originally when we, when was it, Denise? February and March of 1999 when we had the Center for Disease Control and I sat on prevention and you were in the treatment, I think. And we put this all together, and the key thing was in the prevention, to prevent all this stuff, because the health effects are a given.
Yeah.
The medical problems are a given. The environmental cleanup requirements are a given. And again, all this stuff is totally ignored for the political and economic implications.
Well, you know, the political and economic implications are huge. I mean, first of all, you don't get to fire these things anymore. You got to go back to conventional explosives. Then the cleanup is staggering. Then the legacy, I think there's some animal studies of introducing alpha radiation into rats, not DU, okay, strontium or something, and they can show that it passes on to the unexposed offspring for both leukemia and birth defects. So all of a sudden in the areas where it's widely used, Balkans and Middle East, you're talking about a legacy now of passing on and on. And, you know, I've been challenged on this. Oh, come on, Dr. Payne. You think exposure of mama here will pass it three generations? What's the first question when we see cancer? We ask them, does it run in your family? Because of the mutational. The mutations will track down. The implications are astounding, but that shouldn't make us shy away from the truth here.
I guess, you know, we're running down here. We got about 10 minutes left or so, a little 5 or 6 minutes left. What can we get everybody to do? Obviously, those of you in Hawaii, those of us who are trying to help you in Hawaii, a bunch of us have been involved with the DU project that came to help you. My cousin called me in. What do we need to have everybody that's listening to Warrior Connection do? How can they help you? What can they do to advance your causes for, monitoring, advance your causes for total cleanup and cessation of training, on explosives and weapons stuff there in Hawaii?
Well, the first thing I would say about that is to realize it's not a Hawaii problem only, that these weapons, DU weapons, are likely to have been used in practically every state in the United States, as well as foreign countries. So it's a national and it's a global problem. So I think it has to be addressed on that level as well. So getting the federal government, state governments, local governments somehow to look into this matter. We've been calling for the surveys, air monitoring, soil testing for years. So around these military bases to document that it's off the base and then go from there. Maybe Lauren has some ideas.
First of all, we've been pushing this issue for quite a long time. And some people in the public, they say, oh, that DU thing again. You guys still doing that? The public has a very short attention span. You know, they showed smoking causes cancer in the mid-50s, okay, the Ochsner brothers from Tulane. Now, let's say this is 1940, and we've been after smoking and cancer, and we say, no, we really got the information now. We really have something new to tell you. And they say, oh, it's a smoking thing again. You know, I don't want the public to get complacent because we've been at this a long time. But what's new? What's new? That FOIA you sent us, the military itself, now, I know you've been saying this ad nauseum, I mean, for years, Doug, the military itself admits the harm and exposure. So if you say that, it's no longer a question. So that's new. University of Albany, that's new to me. I mean, these are heavy hitters. And I think it's time to seriously have a discussion what to do. Now, believe me, some guys in the public are a little bit tired of this issue, but that doesn't make it any safer.
I think the short span, because, you know, we've done what? We've done CBS News, we've done 60 Minutes, we've done Dateline, Nightline, we've done the BBC, we've done the CBC, we've done Al Jazeera, we've done over and over and over again. But again, the public has got this one-track mind where it sees it for a few minutes and then it disappears and the next story comes out.
Yeah.
And they figure, well, this isn't affecting me, so I'm going to ignore it. And then we know, and Denise, how many years have you been walking the halls of the House and the Senate, and I helped you do this, on all of these issues, that even though you brief them and they know, they somehow don't do any action. I mean, Denise, that's got to be frustrating for you.
Terribly.
I wish Rosalie Bertel was still alive. She had something. I don't know, but to me, Doug, Denise, I think it's time to go to the media with this new FOIA things, that the packet you sent out. I mean, and if not for ourselves, for the areas where this stuff was used. I've had physicians come from the Balkans on their own time telling me about the birth defects. I mean, and it's not like one generation. According to the animal models, it'll continue on.
Well, you know, Heike Schroeder did it, and we did it for the Discovery Channel, where we actually came down and did the total confirmation on known DU casualties, confirmed the RNA, DNA changes, confirmed all the genetic structural changes, confirmed it all the way down in track. So there's no question at all. Melissa McDermott, again, on just a handful of my guys at G-Town, she found all the uranium in the semen, the RNA, DNA changes, in the sperm that was passed on, and we've seen that ad nauseum. Denise, how many years have you been dealing with and trying to get a handle on all the incredible female genetic and medical abnormalities? Forever, right?
Yeah.
Doug, I have a suggestion for action for people outside of Hawaii, what you can do to help us here in Hawaii. You know, there's this coexistence between the tourist industry and the military here that should not exist. And I think pressure needs to be put on the state of Hawaii, on the Hawaii Visitors Bureau, that we have a problem with this depleted uranium, and it needs to be looked into. So if people could send some letters to state authorities, the Hawaii Visitors Bureau, or the government offices, the governor, the mayors, saying they're not going to come to Hawaii until this issue of depleted uranium is looked into more seriously. It's being shined on, and that's something you can do. Put economic pressure. Put sanctions on the state of Hawaii until it's dealt with here.
Now, you know they're going to shoot Jim. He's the messenger.
They've been shooting me, as you all know. I mean, I just got the crap beat out of me in November because I tried to get this info out. So,
yeah, but we are only the messenger. You have your documents. I'm just showing you what the military said.
You know, when I got assigned to do this thing and Denise picked it up right away, we were strictly the messengers getting the message out of their own requirements, their own medical directives, their own environmental remediation cleanup. Yeah, we wrote them for them, but then they signed them mandatory. And the craziest thing about this, General Eric Shinseki is a guy that wrote this 1993 order for medical care, environmental, and training. He got me on the DU project, signed the Army regulations that you're trying to get them to enforce and comply with. And yet, the people in the VA and the military and all the patients going to the VA can't get proper medical care, even when the guy that runs the VA is the guy that signed the order mandating the medical care.
I think they didn't realize how expensive it would be.
Well, that was what was said day one.
Yeah, but don't forget, it's as astounding as the VA care is, imagine what's going on in the theaters for the native populations.
There is no medical care.
I mean, this is a weapon of mass destruction here, unintended, non-combatants here.
I know I got letters and correspondent with British doctors and physicians working in Kuwait, and the Emirate of Kuwait now has shut everything down because the health effects are so severe there that they don't want the discussion brought out to get everything, you know, tossed apart and get the U.S. military to, I don't know, whatever, become accountable in Kuwait because they got to count on them for everything.
Denise, you know when you confirmed the rat heterogenetic and cancer leukemia affects passing in generation. We can do that. We can look at the mutations and markers. But then what? These are typically the things you cannot treat, or you certainly can't cure. And, but at least we can prevent and stop using these things.
Doug, one final point. You know, for your listeners, if they go to our website, our peace organization, which is Malu Aina, that's spelled MALU-Aina, AINA.org, I'll put up there some addresses, and there's also a great film called Pohakuloa, that's Pohakuloa. That's the name of the base in the center of our island that's contaminated. If you Google that, you can watch the film on Pohakuloa.
Well, what I'll do on the archives, I'll put up your whole, your paragraph, your unparagraph, and your, close-out paragraph on your emails and everything for everybody to contact.
Thank you, Doug.
We can do that. Ladies and gentlemen, again, the Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knoll has done documentaries on this. He's done research. He's helping us. He's getting the information out, giving us an opportunity to do this. I mean, this is leading-edge stuff. I mean, you've got three military officers here dedicated to the health and safety of the troops and the public and everybody and the non-combatants trying to clean it up. You've got civilians, Jim and your group, incredible work. But again, it comes down to the same scary thing. The health and environmental effects of military operations are staggering. Nobody wants to acknowledge it or admit it because of the myths and the lies that continue and the fact that there's no casualties. And then everybody, whether you're a civilian or in the military, can't get proper and optical medical care. I mean, my doctor, again, I was spent all day Friday, either the VA or a civilian doctor, and their direct thing to me on Friday, Doug, all we can do is optimize your remaining health and your team's remaining health because we don't know what else to do, and there's no real treatment for it. And it comes back down to it, and my last doctor I saw at the end, he said, what we got to do is come back to what you guys have said is prevention, prevention, prevention. I mean, the future is horrible. I mean, we've got, 2 million casualties now in the U.S. military alone, millions of civilians affected. We got all the same health effects that you guys are seeing on Hawaii, seeing down in Vieques, Puerto Rico. We're seeing it over here in Jefferson Proving Ground, Indiana. We're seeing it in Nevada. We're seeing it every place. I know. To me, it's mind-boggling.
It's kind of like when AIDS was first discovered. They didn't want us to diagnose it because there was no treatment. And they said, why are we just diagnosing this stuff? Everyone gets depressed. We're diagnosing it because we can talk about prevention, protected sex. And so if that's what the ball game is now, prevention, then do it. Now, somebody's going to be hurt. The guy's selling it as weaponry. If it's financially, they're going to take a loss. We're not going to have some lethal weapon. We're going to have to go back to spears and machetes. But, just lay it on the table.
Yeah, I mean, all the contaminated equipment and structures and everything that's all been recycled, that's been getting back into the environment, back into household products. I mean, we had DU contaminated metal made back into cooking pots. We had the stuff coming back in bumpers. It's all over, and it's a staggering problem that's got to be resolved. Well, I think we're coming up on the end of the show. Jim, Lauren, Denise, thank you very much. Jim, Lauren, can you come back on Warrior Connection again?
Thank you, Doug.
Okay, take care, guys. God bless.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.